KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Richmond.
Outer Sunset.
Hey, I'm from Foster City.
Alameda.
Coming up, Oakland mayoral candidate Peter Liu shares his plan to boost the city's tourism and economy.
We're going to build giant water slides using our most precious resources to draw in valuable tourists.
Then performing artist Phonique talks about the journey going from ballet to drag.
I can be a drag queen and be a ballerina and no one cares if I'm good. So it's like being a drag queen actually gives you all this power to kind of embody anything you want.
And two inmates talk about what it was like to be in separate prison populations and now living together.
How are you going to integrate with people on the outside if you can't integrate with them in here?
Stay tuned. Cross Currents is next. In just under 3 weeks, Oakland residents will be casting their ballots to re-elect Mayor Libby Schaaf or vote for a change in leadership. We wrap up our series today on the mayoral candidates with this 10th and final interview. Army veteran Peter Liu ran for California governor in this year's Republican primary and lost. This is his second run for mayor of Oakland. He spoke with KALW's Janae Darden at Lake Merritt about his politics and ideas for the city.
What's the difference between running for governor versus running for mayor?
In the Bay Area, it's much more liberal than the statewide. So in the gubernatorial race, you could say a lot of things that are Republican, and it'll appeal to a larger segment of the population versus a mayoral candidate in Oakland. It's like 90% liberal here, so you have to say things appealing to them, which I quite said a lot, you know, because I'm a very comedic kind of guy. So I said a lot of funny things on social media, and that attracts a lot of voters. And people like listening to jokes about politics, and that's what I do.
How is it running as a Trump supporter in Oakland?
It's good because I like independent thinking. I'm like Kanye West. I don't think about, you know, just liberal policies. I think about what's right for the people and what's good for the people. And that's what Trump is doing. He's doing good things for the people. He's getting results. He's meeting all these black pastors, like also Kanye West and other black leaders. I think it's good for our country that we have a president that could bring the community together.
A lot of people here in Oakland, they feel like President Trump has caused division, and we've definitely seen an increase in violence, especially racial violence, since he has campaigned and taken office. What's your response to that?
Most of the violence is done by the left towards the MAGA supporters. Recently, Hillary called for her supporters to be uncivil. Now, what that means is violence. That's cold word. And she has done a lot of violent stuff in her past.
So there's a lot of division within the country right now. How are you going to kind of bridge the divide if you are elected mayor of Oakland?
All right. First, we have to teach people capitalism. There's a lot of kids in Oakland, a lot of adults. They don't even know what capitalism is. Okay. So I'm teaching what capitalism is and how to make themselves successful using the capitalism. Because when you go through school, they don't teach you the employer mentality. They teach you the employee mentality to make sure that you are just slaves to the society, whereas I am going to teach you how to become the masters of the society. Capitalism is about taking an idea and making the most profit from your idea. And let's say, for example, the winning idea is a bed that is a round-shaped tube bed. Just a tube-shaped bed that you can fit any size mattress in there. Let's say if in event of an earthquake, let's say a 7.0 earthquake happened, and you happen to live in one of these tube beds that's made of 1-inch metal, you would survive. And let's say after 5 years of selling like 10,000 units, let's say a company, Mantini Sleep World, comes around. They say, hey, we loved your idea. We're going to buy your company for, let's say, $65 million. You know, at At which point you say, hey, you know what, 65 million is down on the low side. We think 85 million is a good price for our company. And if the company agrees, you're going to be wealthy. Now, with this concept, you're going to make money being smart. Okay? There's a difference between working hard and working smart.
One of your solutions that you've talked about that some people have laughed at, but I want to hear from you, is you've talked about you want to have a water park. Or you want to, you think, because we're talking about money now, you think having water parks throughout Oakland will bring revenue. And we're right here at Lake Mirror. This was one of the sites, right, where you want to have a water park. So talk about your idea for the water park.
Okay. There's a lot of potential for Oakland to draw in tourism. I mean, Paris has its Eiffel Tower. What do we have? We're going to build giant water slides using our most precious resources to draw in valuable tourists. And for every sizable park in Oakland, we could turn it into a unique theme park experience that we may, as a city, we're going to draw in like 50 million tourists in order to have our businesses to our locals, to enrich our locals with jobs to locals, and give valuable tax revenue to the city in order to pay for its pension plans, you know, the pension liabilities. And I want to make the city the number one city for romance in the Western Hemisphere.
And so the romance is through the water park?
Yeah, through the water park and also through the other sizable parks that I'm going to make. We're going to have discounts for couples. And then we're also going to have create, you know, like those capsule hotels in which you could fit like, you know, tens of thousands of people in one huge building. It's like a laundromat. They're using it in Japan. So let's say people who are temporary coming to Oakland for work, they could stay in those capsule hotels for very cheap because, you know, it's very small. And I would say, you know, for like $15 a day, they could stay in one of those capsule hotels.
Is that also an idea for the homeless crisis?
Absolutely. If we make it very affordable, I mean, homeless people, if there's 50 million tourists coming to the city, there'll be jobs for everyone in the city.
Now, I have a question. If you don't win, because you run for governor and you run for mayor, if you don't win, what would you run for next?
I won't run for anything, probably. I'm just going to retire because my wife, she's been slapping me all over because I ran for a governor and then ran for a mayor. She's not having it. You know, she just want a quiet life, quiet husband, you know, not to bring all this distraction and stuff like that. And now that I'm successful, I think I have a valuable lesson to teach the next generation of Oaklanders. And if they don't elect me, you know, that's fine with me. It's not my loss. I'm still going to enjoy my life. It's their loss because they no longer have that kind of a leadership that they could have.
That was Oakland mayoral candidate Peter Liu. You can hear all of Janae Darden's conversations with the 10 mayoral candidates at kalw.org. And just a quick note, the deadline to register to vote this year is October 22nd. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Under her drag queen alter ego, Phonique, performing artist Monique Jenkinson has connected art and entertainment for over a decade as a fixture on the San Francisco experimental performance scene. Phonique's latest production, Girl, is a collaboration with her longtime partner, electronic music composer Mark Kate. Inspired by horror film concepts, Girl combines elements of theater, dance, music, and drag to speak to the feminine in everyone and ask the question, who's the girl in you? Phonique and Mark came to KLW to talk about their new show and explain why it took so long for them to finally collaborate.
Monique and I met in the mid-80s at basically summer theater camp at Northwestern University when we were both in high school.
There was a personal spark when we met each other, for sure. You know, we had, I think, an instant rapport, but it was a kind of, we had a kind of across the crowded room love connection over a play. We saw a play together. So this play was called Road, and it was this English play.
The play was, I mean, it was very, very heartbreaking. And so, you know, the end of it, everybody just sort of got up and walked out of the theater, and I was weeping. And I was just like, oh, am I the only one that was this affected by this work? And I saw Monique across the crowded room, and she had the exact same expression on her face. And that kind of said a lot.
At the end of the play, we both had the same response to this play and ended up talking about the play for like hours and hours and hours and hours afterwards. And I feel like that's kind of when we fell in love.
I will say, though, in a maybe sort of more mundane, very high school way, we totally bonded over music. Like, we liked the same bands, and that goes a long way when you're in your teens, you know?
His hair looked like the hair of the bass player from Bauhaus. And so, I mean, what wasn't to love, you know? And he had a, you know, a Smiths t-shirt and a Frankie Goes to Hollywood t-shirt. I mean, at first, you know, your Frankie Goes to Hollywood t-shirt actually sent me the signal that you might be my new gay bestie. But, yeah.
And I still might be.
This is true.
It was summer theater camp. These codes are, you know, they are what they are.
Exactly.
That tends to be the magnet, or tended, especially at that time, to be the magnet for all the queer kids, whether they knew it or not, were out or not, to congregate. And so we both, at our respective high schools, were surrounded by queer kids. We both grew up through our adolescence and into adulthood in queer communities.
I would go so far as to say, you know, we kind of both grew up and continue to identify as culturally queer, that the queer culture has been our home in so many ways. And for me, yes, it definitely then just grew into my culture. I mean, from dance and then into drag and into the drag clubs, where my primary cultural location is the queer club, for sure. I grew up training in classical ballet, and one of the moments in classical ballet that were, for me, where classical ballet and drag came together, I put on fake eyelashes for the first time. And I remember looking at myself thinking, this is what my face is supposed to look like. Like, I want to look like this all the time. When I started getting interested in drag aesthetics and all of that stuff, it really just opened my mind as to, you know, what was possible. I think the first drag queen I fell in love with really was Boy George. I mean, back to sort of the music of the 80s. But for me, coming from dance into drag, and it was actually, you know, I'd kind of, as many of us do, I'd left classical ballet and gone into contemporary dance and then was really immersed in contemporary dance when I moved here, and then was kind of craving the spectacle and the showiness and the sequins and the drag of ballet. It was going back into drag that brought me back into ballet. It was going into drag, rather. So when I started performing in drag clubs, I realized, oh, ballet is this tool that I have. I can be a drag queen and be a ballerina, and no one cares if I'm good. No one cares if my thighs are too big. No one cares, you know, and so it's like you being a drag queen actually gives you all this power to kind of embody anything you want.
We definitely bonded in the first place over this one piece of performance. And despite that, we've never truly collaborated. We have Monique being a dancer and performer, my being a musician, it's an obvious fit. And so we've worked together on things, but only with her as the boss or me as the boss, so that decisions fall to one of us. I think that we realized very early on in our relationship that if we would try to truly collaborate, it would just be very hard on our relationship. Relationships are hard enough as it is without inserting the temperamental nature that collaborating on artwork can create. But all these years later, we had this opportunity to go and do a residency together in Zurich to collaborate on something. And at first we thought, no, we don't do that. And the producer of that space who was inviting us said, are you sure? We're talking, you know, we want to bring you to Zurich. And so we had a further discussion and said, well, we've been together almost 3 decades. We can probably manage not breaking up over making art in Zurich. It did come full circle where we bonded over this performance and now we're working on a performance together. And it's been great. It's been 99% easy and fun and 1%, you know, super tough. All those difficulties of negotiating decisions in a relationship are the right there in the studio. We sat down in Zurich to work on this piece and Monique sort of broached the most obvious subject. So, okay, Mark, why? Why is this so central to you? And we had this long conversation about how, you know, about my relationship with nightmares and the way I filter things through these extremes, and the way I tend to look at violence and things like that. And I think really what happened was Monique coming to her current work through a feminist lens and my being focused on horror, there's a place where those obviously intersect. All of these, let's just say slasher films, they all have female protagonists, all of them. And they pretty much all have a female protagonist who survives. And it's kind of the only genre that does that. It's hard to think of other, even still, Hollywood movies don't have female protagonists, but all horror movies do, virtually. But they're subject to violence. So what's that about? Why are we doing this? And what are we, when teenage boys go and see these horror films, what's happening in the process of them identifying with these young surviving women? That was kind of the genesis of this piece, of thinking about violence and feminism.
As a choreographer, and it's been fun with this piece moving into my different modes of working, which are as a drag performer, as a performer, as a writer, and as a choreographer. And choreographically, yes, we started with really specific movement explorations that were based on films and then started to abstract those, which is something that I think good choreography does, or good art does, right? It takes something, changes it again.
We first started just playing with images and ideas. We'd sort of watch a bit of a horror film and see, go, okay, what's interesting here and how can we reduce it to its purest elements and replicate that in the studio, and then go, okay, forget the film. What do we have now? What are we representing? What does this feel like? What can this do to an audience? What is it doing to us?
Then you start to layer elements onto it, like light, like sound, and then it becomes its own experience. So it's always working on these different levels. So what you're doing personally, what's happening politically, is always present in the work that you're making.
You can check out Phonique and Mark Kate perform in Girl this weekend at the Joe Good Annex in San Francisco. Be sure to log on to klw.org for more details. That piece was produced by Tarek Foda. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Back in the 90s, the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, or CDCR, was trying to manage escalating violence behind prison walls. One way they decided to address that was establishing something called Sensitive Needs Yards, or SNY, to separate people who might need protective custody from the general prison population. These were people like police informants, former gang members, and people seen as committing unfavorable crimes like child molestation. molestation. Until recently, there were almost 130,000 inmates on SNY yards, making California the state with the most people in protective custody. But the problems of violence didn't go away. And in fact, specific SNY gangs formed. So in the past several months, CDCR has decided to desegregate the population so that all incarcerated people will live together. San Quentin is one prison that already has non-designated programming facilities, or integrated yards. But integration isn't always a smooth process. From San Quentin Radio, reporter Greg Sayers brings us a conversation between Lewis Light, who's always been part of the general prison population, and Michael Hildebrandt, who was formerly housed in SNY. And we'll hear what their experiences were like apart and what it's like to live together now.
Okay, so here's my question to you, right? Because I guess a lot of us in the GP really all want to know this question. Why did you go SNY?
I'm not a racist, and that's what I felt most of the GP was based on, was racism and, you know, superiority, inferiority, and I didn't like, and I'm on the outside, I wasn't a racist, and I don't ever plan on being one. And there came a lot of politics of who's doing what, you know.
So you're saying with the white guys were pressuring you to stand true to the white power type of thing, or what? That's
basically what it comes down to.
Okay.
And that's not who I am. And the pressure just got to be a little too much, so I decided, you know, I'm gonna try it on the other side.
Okay, so 2-3 months ago, they did a little survey in the building saying how we feel about the SNYs coming to the main line. And me personally, I had mixed emotions on it. You know, there's a lot of tough times we have in prison where sometimes we wanna tap out as GP guys, but we don't. So there might be a little bit of, I don't know, bitterness / anxiety with that, because, you know, I paid my dues and we ended up, you know, going through the hardships and we didn't lock up, you know, like the other guys. But overall, I don't have a problem with it.
Let us go ahead and blend back together, because you're not gonna find any less violent people on this side than you are on the other. We're all basically in the same boat, maybe for different reasons, but to a certain extent, it shouldn't matter. We're forcing segregation on ourselves. Blacks still sit at one set of tables, whites at another, so on and so forth. How are you going to, like he said, how are you going to integrate with people on the outside if you can't integrate with them in here?
Simple, change. Us inmates don't like change. We're scared of change. What's that? Go ahead.
No, you're dead on. Keep going. I like it.
No, I was just saying, it's the change. It's the new faces. We've all been here in the last 18 years and familiar with all the same faces. And now there's change, and even more change, PC change, so now we're a little skeptical.
That's dead on, because guys have been doing this. When I got here, guys were sitting up saying, you know, go in, grab a seat at a table, you know, no problem. But what we end up with is guy coming over, hey, you're sitting in my seat. I've been sitting in this chair for 25 years. Okay, you're right. He's afraid of change.
The way I see it is everybody's just doing their time. Everybody has their own reasons why they're in prison, but you know, their way of thinking, and I guess my way of thinking as well, is if we can't function with PCs or sensitive need people in prison, how are we gonna function with them in society? Because we all have the same objective, and that is?
Getting the hell out of here.
To go home.
Thanks to Lieutenant Sam Robinson for facilitating and getting that story out. You can hear more stories from San Quentin Radio. Just go to KALW.org and click Prison Stories. And while you're on the website, subscribe to the Cross Currents podcast. Go to KALW.org and click Cross Currents. The Cross Currents team includes Nina Gensler-Depp, Sarah Coast, Angela Johnston, Maggie McKay, Kevin McLean, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega-Welch, True Gwynn, and Eli Wortschafter. Our engineers are Tariq Foda, James Rowlands, and Gabe Graben. Shirin Adil is our content manager. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by Los Sensontles from San Pablo. They're performing at the Presidio Officers Club in San Francisco tomorrow night. Show starts at 7 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.